In the Far North 1901. I. Jack Barrington, nominal owner of Tinandra Downs Cattle Station on the Gilbert River in the far north of North Queensland, was riding slowly over his run, when, as the fierce rays of a blazing sun, set in a sky of brass, smote upon his head and shoulders and his laboring stock horse plodded wearily homewards over the spongy, sandy soil, the lines of Barcroft Book came to his mind, and, after he had repeated them mentally, he cursed aloud. That's where the dead men lie. Poor Book must have thought of this godforsaken part of an utterly godforsaken country, I think, when he wrote out where the dead men lie. For I believe that God Almighty has forgotten it. Oh, for rain, rain, rain. Rain to send the Gilbert down in a howling yellow flood, and turn this blasted spinifex waste of scorching sand and desolation into green grass, and save me and the youngsters from giving it best, and going under altogether. Boak knew this cursed country well. I wonder if he ever owned a station, one with a raging drought, a thundering mortgage, and a worrying and greedy bank suing him on to commit suicide, or else provide rain aside issues. I don't suppose he had a wife and children to leave to the mercy of the Australian Pastoralists Bank. D. And curse the Australian Pastoralists Bank, and the drought, and this scorching sand and hateful spinifex, and God help the poor cattle. He drew rein almost under the shade of a clump of stunted sandalwood, which had, in good seasons, been a favourite mustering camp, and looked about him, and then he passed his hand over his eyes to shut out for a few moments the melancholy spectacle before him. I have said that he pulled up almost under shelter. Further he could not advance, for the heart, parched ground immediately under the shade of the sandalwoods was thickly covered by the stiff and sun-dried carcasses of some hundreds of dead cattle, which, having become too weak to leave the sheltering trees in search of food and water, had lain down and died. Beyond, scattered singly and about in twos and threes, were the remains of scores of other wretched beasts, which, unable to drag themselves either to the sandy riverbed or to the scanty shade of the stunted timber, had perished where they fell. With a heavy sigh, Harrington dismounted, took off his water bag from the saddle, and pouring a little water into his hat, gave his horse a drink. Then he drank a few mouthfuls himself, filled and lit his pipe, and sat down, to rest a while until the sun had lost its fierce intensity, and think. And he thought despairingly of the black prospect which for the past 6 or 7 months had tormented him by day, and haunted him at night, broken now and then with a gleam of hope when the pitiless blue of the sky changed to grey, and rain seemed near, only to be followed by renewed and bitter disappointment. It cannot last much longer, he thought. Even if rain came within a week, the rest of the poor brutes left alive will be too weak to recover, and there's not hands enough on the station to cut leaves for them. Even the blacks have cleared out lower down the river. Found a good waterhole, I dare say, and, likewise niggers, are camping there. Why doesn't Providence give a poor honest bullock as much show for his life in a drought as a damned, filthy blackfellow? Instead of hoofs, in this part of the country at any rate, cattle ought to have feet like a bandicoot, then the poor beasts could worry along by digging waterholes in the riverbed. Then, sick at heart as he was, a faint smile flitted over his sun-bronzed face at the fancy. An hour passed, and Harrington, with another weary sigh, rose and saddled his horse, one of the few now remaining to him and able to carry a rider. 5 miles away from the sandalwood camp was another and larger patch of timber, tall, slender brigalows, which grew on the edge of a dried-up swamp, once the haunt and breeding place of countless thousands of wild duck, teal, and geese. This was another of the mustering camps on Tinandra, and as it lay on his way home, he decided to go there and see if any of the big swamp cattle were still alive. As he rode slowly over towards the fringe of timber, the westering sun turned from a dazzling, blinding gold to a gradually deepening red, and his sweating horse gave a snort of satisfaction as the soft, spongy, and sandy spinifex country was left behind, and the creature's hoofs struck upon the hard sun-baked plain of yellow earth which lay between the two camps. Looking down at the great, widely spreading cracks in the hungry soil, the result of a 7 months' continuous drought, Harrington almost unconsciously bent his head and thought that surely God would send rain. He was not a religious man in the conventional sense, he had never been inside a church in his life, but the memory of his dead mother's belief in God's mercy and goodness was still strong within him. The brigalow scrub was about half a mile in length, and stood between the swamp and the high river bank. At the dried-up bed of the swamp itself he did not care to look a second time. Its once reedy margin was now a sight of horror, for many hundreds of cattle had been bogged there long months before, as they had striven to get further up to the center where there was yet left a little water, saved from evaporation by the broad leaves of the blue water lilies. Skirting the inner edge of the scrub till he reached its center, he looked carefully among the timber, but not a beast was to be seen. Then dismounting he led his horse through, came out upon the river bank, and looked across the wide expanse of almost burning sand which stretched from bank to bank, unbroken in its desolation except by a few tea trees whose roots, deep down, kept them alive. "Bob, old fellow," he said to his horse, "we've another 10 miles to go, and there's no use in killing ourselves. I think that we can put in half an hour digging sand, and manage to raise a drink down there in the riverbed." Still leading the animal, which seemed to know his master's intention, Harrington walked down the sloping bank, his long riding boot sinking deeply into the fine, sandy soil, and Bob pricked up his ears and gave a true stock horse sigh of weariness and anticipation combined. On the opposite side of the riverbed and close